That's 42 people in the audience. And it was an afternoon, actually, Wednesday afternoon, because the police didn't want the Sex Pistols playing at night because they thought it would be bad things. And so there was 42 people on an afternoon in a horrible room. And out of that came Manchester's pop music and a lot of famous bands who was trying to show. The point being of what comes out of very, very small things. Now, I'm going to show you this next DVD because it gives you, this is a more of a documentary, and it could give you an account, first account of Manchester in the beginning. Let's have a look.
City of Kings, where order shall not rest on force.
Oh, I want you to show it.
Not the love.
So this film is a documentary made by a journalist at the time called John Savage, and he was involved in at the time. And I'm going to show this film because the beginning and the end of it actually give a story about Manchester. They give a story about Manchester being an industrial city with no future to, at the end, being a changed post-industrial city full of creative people. As Tony Wilson says, it starts off, it used to be a shiny industrial city, and now it's a shiny post-industrial city, and that was because of the music. And this is a quote from a very famous American writer, Marshall Berman, very much about modernity. And what he's claiming is that Manchester's in the centre of modernity, where there's both good things and bad things, dangers and possibilities. Okay.
I can remember very precisely what Manchester was like in the mid-70s. It felt like a piece of history that had been spat out. This had been the historic centre of the modern world. We invented the Industrial Revolution in this town. And yet, even though we did, we also invented these conditions. It was really grimy and dirty, dirty old town.
You were always looking for beauty because it was such an ugly place. Whether again on a subconscious level. I mean, I don't think I saw trees that were that day.
There are your playgrounds, your porches and sun lounges, whatever else you can use them for.
I just heard about factories. Nothing that was pretty. Nothing.
I remember first I was just seeing all these ends to end service houses. And then the next time we went, it was just a pile of rubble. Then the next time we went, it was sort of like all this building work. And then by the time you were in the teens, it was this big concrete fortress, quite futuristic at the time. And then it was concrete kind of setting, and it looked horrible.
I was born in 1956. I lived in my grandparents' house. And they used to talk about the war all the time. My grandparents' sister would bomb house job. I remember we had a room there and it was full of like gas masks and smells of British flags and, you know, old radio sets, paraphernalia for the war.
I remember in Salford Grammar School when we were at it. Single venom. I think the engineer was still pretty good. Can I remember the size?
Okay, now I'm going to show you this, and it's quite a long bit. It's going to be about 15 minutes, and it's about what it's about is the making of what their first LP called Unknown Pleasures. I'll show you a picture of it later. Unknown Pleasures came out in 1978, and it came from a local band, as we could see, called Joy Division, and they didn't go to art college. They just worked in the local offices and local places, and they created this amazing album. And it comes out of punk rock, but it's a different kind of punk rock. And I'll just quote Tony Wilson, will say in a minute what I think it's quite good, really. He says, punk rock just said, all it said was, fuck off. That's what it did, basically. It was fuck off. But what Joy Division did, they said, I'm fucked, which means I'm messed up. And really, this LP is about how they're messed up and how the city's messed up and what they're going to do about it.
Get Ian to sound like James Brown. So he'd sing like James Brown. He's got whiskey, playing with whiskey, telling him to sound like James Brown. It's not the way. Really, he just kind of got very fractious and started yelping like a dog, and decided it'd be best take him home. Somehow, it couldn't go any further. It was just a single, venomous, one-syllable, two-syllable phrase of anger, which was necessary to reignite rock and roll. But sooner or later, someone was going to want to say more than fuck to you. Someone was going to want to say, I'm fucked. And it was Joy Division who were the first band to do that, to use the energy and simplicity of punk to express more complex emotions.
Seeing as how this is the programme which previously brought you first television appearances for everything from the Beatles to the Buzzcocks, would you like to keep our hand in and keep you informed of the most interesting new sounds in the Northwest? For this, Joy Division is the most interesting new sound we've come across in the last 6 months. They're a Manchester band, with the exception of the guitarist, who comes from Salford. Very important difference. They're called Joy Division. In some words, Shadow. Tony started doing Factory Night, there was always this kind of void. There was the band, then there was nothing, and then there were some people sort of lurking, and second time the sort of void was kind of getting sort of narrower and narrower, so that in an adventure there was even the odd person dancing. We were very, got an audience now. I saw it, I was just absolutely astounded. It was unbelievably good. And I felt so in awe of somebody who was just there, and he starts that down, which I've seen the very kind of like scenes on.
It was otherworldly. And I'm thinking, this is Ian, and when I smile at his wife, and he's up on stage, and it's totally inspirational, hypnotic, and I'm sold to it, I bought it. This was a resistance to art and culture.
When Tony sat with Alan and I in sort of Christmas 78 and said, I think we might, or we could do a record from the club for the bands that haven't got contracts yet, this was just like terribly exciting.
Suddenly we had a producer and then Tony Hannah.
I mean, we're just to produce. Fine. Because we didn't have a clue.
Right.
Trying to work out where to put things on. So we didn't score for our own people, say why.
So what's the first thing you do for them? Is it like the idea of actually sound?
Actually, but it's got a beautiful, it's, you know, heaven sent.
Is also somehow weirdly related to Curtis's persona itself, which is, we know now, is bipolar. On the one hand, we have the lad going down the pub with his mates, fooling around. On the other hand, we have the esthete who's reading poetry and imbibing himself with all kinds of highfalutin ideas that he's going to be a romantic pop star hero.
And just looks straight into the camera while he's smoking. It's the eyes, the white translucency of his eyes, looking into the camera, sends a chill through people. 16, 17, 18, 20 and 21, we're getting there. One was in silhouette and there was one when they came slightly out of passageway and we got some side lights. Already by then I've shot two-thirds of a roll of film and I'm conscious of the fact that I didn't really think I had anything. I'm up at the bridge and they're waiting for me. And I just felt it was so bleak and they were so un-rock and roll-like that I took two frames and then took an upright shot of the same thing. And that's all I did of that picture. And that's, I guess, become probably the most recognised Joy Division image.
The idea was to be a band signed to image, and I was sitting in the band on the wall on Sunday night with Greg, who suddenly turns to me and goes, "Why don't we do our first album with you and then go to Warner Brothers?" I remember the thought of being, wow, it was like, are you sure? How much is that going to cost? Might as well cost 10 grand, it cost 25, that's it.
Three weekends to record and mix it. So we played all live, so the first thing we did with Marvin was to just get them recorded in the studio, and then it would be experimentation time and start putting wacky noises on the wacky recorded with Shaft.
It was kind of like you're going on some strange science fiction based journey. There was a lot of pot smoke. He wouldn't say to you, I want you to do it like this. It was kind of all do it again, but a bit more cocktail party, or a bit more yellow.
Magnificent, but humble.
Faster, but slow. Whether it was pot or whether it was the Zen school of production, I don't know.
Already?
Let's try more.
No fucking break. Fuck off, Ian.
Memorably, the AMS, a digital delay line, to press the button, and it's snare drum. Oh, there's a snare drum in the box now. How have you done that, Martin? That's amazing.
He was using that machine that Martin showed the drum sounds forever. But I never knew that Martin was significantly involved in creating the machine. These two strange whiz kids from AMS, Burnley, Lancashire, England, had discovered how, and once a month they would meet him in a car park on top of the moors between Manchester and Burnley. And this lunatic, stroke drug addict, would clamber out of his old Volvo into the back of their car and would rabbit on for 30 minutes about the sounds he was imagining in his head.
Well, this is possibly heresy. I think Martin proposed a way to understand Joy Division. He heard something, he saw something, he felt something from them, and was able to project in his mind what it could be.
Well, the songs were great anyway.
Martin did like, he would produce them. He started, you know, chipping in when we needed it.
Well, that's a job for a producer anyway.
I just remember the whole asleep, you know, it was just an uncanny moment because you did the one with your collection, Next Eruption Music, Next Rebellion, and it didn't look long, it was just basically the Diamond Dogs. It was a great piece of work, but it didn't borrow any of that language, it didn't borrow any of that visual language. It was totally itself, and it couldn't work out how, where it came from. I made the cover that I would have wanted had I found it in a record rack, and nobody, obliged me to do otherwise. And I mean, they give me the elements. I mean, the wave pattern is astonishing. I mean, what an amazing image for something called Unknown Pleasure. I took it to Rob's house. I took the artwork to Rob. And he said, I have a test presser. Do you want to listen to that? I didn't have to sit through 40 minutes and join the vision.
say no. And within moments, I knew that I had a part in a kind of life-changing experience. Minute after minute was beyond anything. It was astonishing. And just as soon as it started and the drums sounded like no drums had ever sounded, and everything seemed to belong in some space but not quite connected, so something amazing had happened. Interpretation of Manchester. You could recognise the landscape and the mindscape and the soundscape in Manchester. It was extraordinary that they managed to make Manchester international, if you like, make Manchester cosmic.
Yeah, I wanted to show you that long clip because I wanted to show two things: how that record, Unknown Pleasures, came out of lots of people. There's the producer, there's Tony Wilson, there's the band, there's the history, the past. I could even go into the band's reading list, or Ian Curtis, the singer, his reading list is very avant-garde literature. All those sort of things came together. So to make a record, it's not, again, unlike classical music, it's not the individual genius, although there is a genius there maybe, how it came together in a place, in a particular place in Manchester at that time. And then the second bit, as expressed around towards the end, is what they did with that. And I don't know if you heard all the words, but it was, this is an iPod Manchester. It's the interior Manchester. They'd taken the landscape and made it an interior landscape. So it's this idea of taking the city and making it your own, making it and turning it into a completely different world to express what? To express its ugliness, to the text at the end there was talking about when will this end? When will this city end? When will this horrible city life end? And of course, within a year of that record, the lead singer killed himself. He hung himself in his room. Mainly, I think, because of he had a medical problem and he took too many of these drugs. But also because, to some extent, they couldn't go any further than where they were going. And it's just that idea of not just... he said at the end, it made Manchester cosmic. It made Manchester global. And at the beginning, I talked about the city council. Their global will be a brand Manchester. But I think what they were saying was that Manchester going global or cosmic was a bit like, as Jerome said yesterday to some of us, actually, it's about a universal, it's turning it into a universal. It's attempting to say something about this city. So it's a very complex process of turning a city into a place, and it's not a very nice place, but it's also a place that's, as the woman said there, that stands still. It's about the past of the city. It's about Manchester's past, the industrial past. It's about the terrible life that's existing in Manchester, but it's holding it still. And it's holding it still, and it's what I call a moment of danger. You saw the quote at the beginning of the film. It's a moment of danger that happens sometimes that I think can happen in politics, but it can also happen in art and culture, where the past and the future are pushed to one side and we get just the present and we see the possibilities of a different kind of future appear. Just the possibility, and we need to really hold on to this. And there's a very famous geographer called Peter Hall wrote a book on creative cities. He's not like Richard Florida, he's not interested in urban regeneration really, but he writes, what are creative cities? And he goes and looks at ancient Rome, he looks at Florence and Venice and New York, lots of different cities, very big book. And he says, creative cities were societies troubled about themselves. They were cities that didn't know where they were going. They were in a state of tension, of transition forward to new and unexplored modes of organizations, in the throes of a transformation in social relationships, in values and in views about the world. Creative cities and creative milieus are places of great social and intellectual turbulence. They're not comfortable places at all. And you think about the way creative cities are sold now. It's great, isn't it? It's about shopping, having your dim sum with your friends, it's nice. But creative cities are not like that. And I think that documentary tried to show how these are very disturbed people, and certainly the singer was more disturbed than any else. And their music, I hope you got an idea of it, it's not very nice music. It's not comfortable music in any way. You wouldn't sit down with your girlfriend or boyfriend and, you know, it's not comfortable music. And I want to I'll show you some. That was that. Oh, I found that on the street in Manchester. I thought it was quite funny. This is Factory Records. That's that. Susan Smith, which I'm not going to talk about. So I want to propose, last three slides now, I want to propose an alternative account of Manchester, not just Manchester, that rather than seeing this moment that we talked about, Manchester's music, as a point of transition from the industrial to the post-industrial, this idea that, Manchester's bands come up, they're very globally famous, we can now become a creative city and a global city. Maybe it was a moment of danger. Maybe it was a very short window, a moment of danger where we could think, what kind of past did we come from and what kind of future can we go to? And I want to to just completely go out of Manchester now to Germany in 1939, just before, well, in Shanghai the war had already started, but in 1939 the war was about to start in the world. And this was a painting, but it's a writing by a guy called Walter Benjamin, who was Jewish and was running away from the Nazis, from the fascists, and he committed suicide because he didn't want to be caught by the Nazis. And he writes about this painting, He calls it the Angel of History. And he says, this is how one pictures the Angel of History. Face turned towards the past, and where we see a chain of events, he only sees a single catastrophe which keeps piling wreckage and throws it in front of its feet. The angel would like to stay, awaken the dead, and make whole what has been smashed, but a storm is blowing from paradise, and he's got its wings caught with such a violence, the angel can no longer use them. The storm irresistibly propels him into a future to which his back is turned, while the pile of debris grows skyward. This storm is what we call progress. So this is a very famous writing by a Marxist, a German Marxist, as I say, in 1939. And this seems to me to talk about Manchester in 1978. Not this moment of progress. Oh, we've gone out of industry, we've invented music and creative industries, and now we're in the future. But a different kind of moment where we stop. And this is my last slide. It's a difficult quote, but what he talks about, where is it? This is where he talks about the flash appearing as a moment of danger. What if, as we're going towards, what if one kind of past we can no longer live with, but what kind of future is going to come? And it's this holding up of a moment of danger where a certain kind of past, a certain kind of tradition comes into view. It seems to me that this is something that Joy Division was not trying to do. They did, if they didn't care it. So I would say, maybe in Manchester, what we got was not a new future, but actually more of the same. The possible new future that these bands were talking about never happened. It became a creative city, but of course now unemployment is as great as ever. It's worse than it ever was. Young people are unemployed, young people have no money, there's big class divisions outside the city centre, people live in poverty, etc. And Manchester really has very little industry or post-industry. So maybe in looking back at these bands, rather than like this film tries to do, see them as the beginnings of regeneration, maybe we could see a vision of the future that we never actually got. So maybe we need to go out and get yourself a future. There you are, three chords, now form a band. That's the end. Okay? Thank you.